Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Dave Newman. Dave Newman teaches at the University of Pittsburgh. He is the author of 5 chapbooks, most recently, Allen Ginsberg Comes to Pittsburgh, published by Platonic Three-Way Press, and Hell in a Handbasket, published by Lummox Press. His novel, Please Don't Shoot Anyone Tonight, is forthcoming from World Parade Books in 2010. Hi, Dave. How you doing?
Good, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Sure. It's been a while. We were saying before the show it's been 15 years or something. Well, sorry, but that's been a while. And you have all these chapbooks, and congratulations on your novel.
Thank you.
That's great.
Thank you.
But today you're going to read poetry.
Right.
Right. And you're going to begin with something from your Allen Ginsberg Comes to Pittsburgh.
Right, exactly.
Chapbook. Okay, go ahead.
This is called Highway Crimes. He had a studio apartment in Greensburg, and there was a map of southwestern Pennsylvania taped to his living room wall. Little red thumbtacks marked convenience stores with access to main roads or highways. I said, convenience stores? You're kidding. I knew he had guts, but this was a bad joke. With a beer in one hand and a smoke in the other, he pointed at the map and said, I've never been more serious about anything in my life. He was a welder without credentials, and he was sick of lousy pay. But who wasn't? I was driving truck then, and I knew this guy in Florida, and he wanted me to run all this marijuana from South Bay up to Michigan. He named a number, and it was more than I'd make in a year. I looked back at my friend with his ridiculous map of convenience stores. The map looked like it had been folded 50 times, so some of the creases looked like roads, and some of the roads disappeared into creases. My friend said, at least 300 a store. 300 a store, right, for 5 years in jail. Don't talk to me about guns. I don't wear disguises. All those thumbtacks. All those pushed-in dreams. This is one set in Johnstown, Pennsylvania. I think the bar is gone now. It used to be a good old man bar. It's called Outside the Lobster Trap Bar. Outside the Lobster Trap Bar in Johnstown, Pennsylvania, a man takes a hard right to the face, falls, then gets kicked in the gut. From the gravel lot, he looks up at his tormentor and, with a bloody mouth, says, I'm a man and you know it. This is called Aliens. It's a love poem. Aliens. She was naked, standing on my bed. With her arms extended, she could almost touch the ceiling. The ceiling was water damaged. I feel like an alien, she said, and proceeded to jump on the mattress like it was a trampoline. I was cutting an apple into small, thin moons. My bathrobe wouldn't stay tied. I made some laser gun noises. She said, I'm flying, I'm flying. Then my upstairs neighbor pounded the floor with a broomstick, and I yelled, sorry, and finished with the apple. It was Thursday. The man with the broomstick was losing his wife to a man who did not drive a 1993 Ford Escort. She jumped off the bed and said, that guy can just eat me. Me too, I said, and handed her the apples, which were a little brown, but probably still okay. It's called clitoris, sometimes known as clitoris. Clitoris. This is in praise of the clitoris, small guide to the village of the female heart. Here are a few lines to say, thank you for your simplicity, for your power, for bringing electricity to every woman I've ever loved. It's obvious to say I'm most happy when I'm licking your beautiful bald face, but less so that you make me believe in the world. If something so small can make someone so large quiver with joy, then surely one day the whole world will learn to feed itself with light and clear blue air. Hello, Mennonites. I used to live in a 3-bedroom apartment with a washer in the bathroom and a refrigerator filled with bottled beer. Once a week, the Mennonites from the church up the road would knock on my front door and tell me that the world was in a bad way. They were wrong. I had clean shirts and Coors Light. I slept where I wrote. I read in the kitchen. The world was hard, but magical too. The Mennonite women dressed funny. The men were off building barns, I guess. One woman said, would you want to bring a child into this world? And I said, sure. I had on clean boxer shorts and a t-shirt. The little boy, dressed in a black suit, hiding behind her legs, leaned out and smiled. The next week, when I opened the door, I said, "Good morning, Mennonites." The following week, I said, "Beautiful day, isn't it, Mennonites?" They kept coming back, but their stays got shorter and shorter. When I was a kid, we went to church, and the preacher, sweating in frenzy, stood behind the pulpit and said, "Repent, or ye will burn in the fiery pits of hell." He actually said that, "ye." The Mennonites never promised damnation, but one woman said, "We're trying to make Jesus' path meaningful and accessible to youth in our highly militarized world." And I said, "Lady, I'm old." And she handed me the pamphlet she'd just been reading from. The Mennonites are hardworking, but they lack the charisma needed to be decent at door-to-door sales. Okay. I don't know anything about God anymore, and I've quit trying to learn how. I guess it's okay to be religious if you don't kill anyone. And the Mennonites, unlike the Catholics, Jews, Protestants, Hindus, and Muslims, have that going on. But I ask you, all of you, believers and non-believers alike, what is more simple than three rooms, clean clothes, and a refrigerator filled with bottled booze?
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Dave Newman. I love the way that voice comes up in your work.
Thank you.
Yeah, I really do. Like we'll be in the midst of some kind of gritty details, you know, some detail about that really place us, you know, irretrievably in the middle of a diner or a truck stop or a street or something. And then this voice will come in and say something like, and I'm quoting from some of your poems, "I know too much about all the wrong things," or "Don't you hate that word," or, you know, something. And so can you talk about the appearance of voice in your work and its interaction with the rest of the poem, because it feels so integrated into the landscape of these details, but it's such a nice moment when it just seems to arise in the poem.
I think it comes from reading, obviously, like the things I love to read. I mean, Walt Whitman has all these wonderful lines. When Whitman's writing in, you know, the 1860s and on, you're pushing through sludge sometimes. All of a sudden, he'll let you this line. It'll just illuminate the moment for you. And I always was just attracted to that, that someone would have something to say but rooted in the world. And I think generally, like, I don't trust lyric poets generally. Like, I have to have some sort of grounding to know where the lyric comes from. So it's kind of like what I love and what I don't love, like what I don't want to do at the same time. It kind of drives me towards that, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So those kind of moments when the voice comes in, do you ever have those lines of voice ahead of time, or do they actually arise from the details? Or, I mean,
they probably do arise more from the details. Like the sometimes they emerge from a draft of a poem will just be, I do this, I do that. You know, here's the truck stop, here's the waitress, this is what's happening. Sometimes I think when you write things, you don't know what they mean yet, even though, you know, this idea of autobiographical material implies that we all just instantly know exactly what everything means. But I think, you know, the insights and things emerge from distance from the material and rewriting and you know, seeing what they mean to you as time goes on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There was something, and I don't think it's as simple as the voice coming up, but I think part of it is that voice in your work that reminded me of Ed O'Chester's work, because he has those great moments with the voice.
He does, yeah.
You know, I'm thinking of his poem about the brain where he says, don't you just love the brain, or don't you just love the head, or something?
Yeah.
You know?
It's hard shell. Yeah.
Do you think that's right? Do you think you're in the same poetry family or something?
I mean, I love Ed O'Chester's work, and I always love a lot of, like, I guess they call them West Coast poets. I love Gerald Loughlin, I love Charles Bukowski. And it seemed like when I first started reading, I was reading things around the world, and the same thing emerged. They would have the grounding, the real world, and then a moment of insight too. Like Nazım Hikmet, the Turkish poet, has a poem where he kind of sets it up. He's in jail, and there's these real simple details. And the last line is, "Being captured is beside the point. The point is not to surrender." Mm-hmm. And I just thought that's such a brilliant line. But it's like it's even more powerful because, you know, it's coming from a guy standing in the infirmary in a Turkish prison. So
yeah. I was gonna say he's in prison. He's not in
jail. Right.
But yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's not the Pittsburgh County.
No, it's not the county lockup.
Yeah.
Okay. How about some more poems?
Sure. Absolutely. I'm gonna read some truck driving poems now. This is called Florida. Dropped off freight near an old folks' community, then picked up a load of sugar in the barrio. A shirtless kid with a sweet smile and bad teeth tried to sell me some pot. I could smell the salt water on the breeze. The kid said, good weed, cheap, cheap. My company says, we will drug test you. The pot says, I will be in your system for weeks. My headache says, you will not sleep for days. My body says, aspirin is a total joke. No one here appears to own shoes. Even nice, friendly poor people can be scary. The kid offered me some other drugs, but he was speaking Spanish and Spanglish, so I mostly just smiled and shook my head. But I would have liked that pot. I would have liked one each of everything else he was selling, too. I would have liked a vacation in the emergency room in a couple hours, hooked up to a nice morphine drip. But I doubt the kid had one of those in the back of his old El Camino, completely restored with a booming stereo and some sweet chrome pipes. Another truck driving poem called I'm Your Driver. I'm your driver. America's filled with whatever you want, and I'm your driver. The parking lot is crowded, and the people trying to get out are not as many as the people trying to get in. I spit at Kansas, turned around, and said, I love you. I punched out Chicago, then danced until closing. I know what the cities need to be cities, the little towns on the country that grow everything we eat, and the roads that connect the two. I'm making smoke, and we're calling it clouds. Truck driving poem set down south. Slow down now and forever. Outside the fire hall, I can barely hear my brother on the other end of the line. I'm in the south, Mississippi maybe, and you can smell the catfish frying. My brother in Detroit wants to take me to a bar where they have photos of Sonny Liston and Babe Ruth on the walls, and behind the bar, a picture of Louis Prima blowing trumpet and kicking heel. Everything, he says, is autographed. Here, at a payphone in the gravel parking lot, everything is autographed too. The streetlights signed by a pistol, the doorway by a man with no legs, the alley by beer cans and speed freaks, and my truck by the empty miles. When are you going to make it up here, he says. The waitress inside is 73 years old. Her grandson is in the army, trying to get out. I know too much about all the wrong things. My brother wants a date so he can make plans. Soon, I tell him, because that's my new dream. My nephew is there too, young to know I'm gone. The whole family is a blur, moving at their own ridiculous speeds. Factory, church, outside sales. The waitress cracks the door, says, already. Her grandson is somewhere, running with a gun. I tell my brother I'll call when I know more. The catfish is hot. The French fries are cold. Christmas Day, I was on the road. New Year's Eve at a truck stop waiting for another load. It's June, and I'm working straight until July. What happened to time? What happened to summer and the way the calendar stopped? What happened to Louis Prima, Sonny Liston, and Babe Ruth? It's easy to be romantic, but home runs went farther, music swung harder, and Sonny Liston knocked out all comers in the early rounds. When I call my company and ask about time off, they tell me I haven't accumulated any vacation. Don't you hate that word, accumulation? I can almost see the snow. 3 in the morning blues. I love old blues records, and when I was trucking, that's all I did is listen to blues constantly. 3 in the morning blues. If it's 3 in the morning and I'm hauling brake castings out of the west side of Chicago, and I couldn't score any meth at the truck stop off I-94, but I'm still keeping time on the drum of my steering wheel, then it has to be Hound Dog Taylor, turned up so loud the speakers are rattling to get out, and I'm singing a lung full of the best boogie-woogie this side of the Mississippi, and that has to be Hound Dog deconstructing Ray Charles on a live version of What I'd Say, and it has to be Hound Dog moaning over the House Rockers' backbeat. It has to be Hound Dog on lead, Hound Dog who didn't actually play slide guitar, but beat the strings with a short metal pole on his pinky. The second shift secretary. The second shift secretary smiles and says, it'll be less than 10 minutes and the warehouse guys will have you loaded. So I take some speed and open a Diet Coke. When the warehouse guy says, sorry, we're running late, I say, no problem. And fill a styrofoam cup with coffee and drink that, then fill another and drink that too. What scares me is the way time disintegrates. It's midnight. I'm writing this in my notebook. I take speed to make money, not poems. The secretary has gone home, and the warehouse guys are all eating donuts in a locked back room. This buzz is my brain. That drum is my heart. My freight is somewhere. I like fire, but not without the road.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the writer Dave Newman, and he's reading his poetry. You know, you said you like old blues music.
I love old blues music.
Yeah, me too, which is great. And your work is thick with it in a couple ways. You know, you have a lot of street in your work and sort of the backside, underside of living, which has a great sense of the real to it. And you know, I love all that. And I'm wondering if those are some of your obsessions as a writer or just as a human. Or...
I mean, I like things that are rooted in the real world. I mean, like if I looked at a painting, a Jackson Pollock painting would do nothing for me. Like I went, when the movie came out a couple of years ago, I was like, well, that's a great movie. What an interesting life. I was still bored to death by his paintings. You know what I mean? Just like it doesn't grab me at all in the way that a Van Gogh or even something Andy Warhol did. That's something, you know, he could do a soup can and it moves me more emotionally than like paint splattered on the page would. And I think the same thing I feel with music. I love like how simple and direct blues songs were and how honest and, you know, the connection even to religion and spirituality, even if I don't have those beliefs. Like my favorite blues album is Mississippi Fred McDowell and the Hunter's Chapel Choir of Como, Mississippi, sing Amazing Grace. Mm-hmm. And it's all these old spirituals. I love them, you know, and they're brilliant. And I mean, I probably don't agree with anything in the songs, but just the material, and it's so honest and so true to what they were living just captures me. And I like poetry that does that too, mm-hmm. you know, when it swings to that gritty. Because I think, like, grit is undervalued in poetry. And, like, I think every life is filled with grit. Like, rich people, poor people... Like, it's unavoidable, that kind of pain and stuff that we have in this world. And I like when people capture that, go in there.
Yeah, I agree that grit is undervalued in poetry. Why do you think that is, though?
I don't know. I mean, I think some of the censoring that goes on in poetry is, I think, because it's controlled mainly by universities, and they tend not to be open to that kind of thing. Do you know Harry Cruz, the writer?
Mm-hmm.
Years and years ago, I mean, he's a big old redneck, you know, probably violent and everything. And when he went up for tenure in Florida years and years ago, one of the more sophisticated Southern gentlemen said, like, the university needs Harry Cruz. They need people like this. Mm-hmm. And I don't think Harry Cruz could get a job now. So, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I just think that's kind of been swept aside, a lot of that. So.
Yeah. Well, you're bringing it back. You know. We're both employed. That's good.
That's right. That's true. That's a good point.
But, yeah, good. All right. The other thing I wanted to mention, you know, was the thickness and the compression in your lines. And, you know, obviously the listeners can't see your lines here,
right.
But
they're huge.
Many – yeah, you have a lot of long lines. And often you have one or two stanza poems.
Right.
And so there's this driving, you know, down the page, you know, not unlike the feeling, although you know it better than I do, of a Mack truck
right.
on a highway.
Right.
But this poem is coming at you, and it's coming down the page. And, you know, I think this urgency, you know, between the grit and the compression in the poems is really effective. So can you talk about the construction of these poems in that way? Because also in contemporary poetry now, there's not as many writers who have the single stanza narrative.
Right. I mean, I like form in free verse poetry, if that makes sense. Like, I'm not very interested in formal poetry anymore, but like the idea that you create the form every time, whatever your poem needs, if that means one stanza coming down the page or, you know, two lines and a cool title or whatever that is. And like, I've just read Sharon Olds' new book, which I liked. And it's the first book from her I've liked in probably 10 years. And I notice when you go through all her like middle period books, the form's the same. It's just she writes, they're all this one page long. There's no, you know, the line breaks are all pretty long. There's no stanza breaks. And it's just like she'd given up. She'd found this poem she liked, and she just plugged all her material into it, like almost like it was a sonnet, even though it was, you know, Sharon Olds' form. And I like poets who, like, mix it up, you know, short poem, long poem, words all over the page, line breaks, you know, whatever it takes, whatever the poem requires. I just – I admire that in writing, so I try to bring some of that to my own mm-hmm. writing, you know, whatever it needs.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Can you read some more poems?
Yeah. This is another truck-driving poem called Change the Tire. I get a flat tire. I drive on. I find a truck stop and call my dispatcher, who says, might as well get it changed. I drive around the truck stop on my full and flat tires and park in front of the garage. A man covered in grease says, it's going to be a while. The other men, who are usually covered in grease, have called off. I say, okay. I call my dispatcher. He says, damn it. He makes arrangements for another driver to pick up my loan. That driver leaves me his empty trailer. I'm not getting paid for this. I eat a sandwich and fries. Then I walk to another truck stop down the road and eat another sandwich and more fries. I burp into my napkin, then order ice cream. Back at the garage, the mechanic says, nope. He rubs his greasy eye with his greasy finger. He could be going blind. I say, maybe an hour? He says, go get something to eat. I can't eat anymore or I'll die. I don't want to die. Not here, with a flat tire. I hang out in the waiting room. I watch TV. I drink Diet Coke. I read a hunting magazine. I read a fishing magazine. I don't read the car magazine. The mechanic says, I'm sorry about this. I say, that's okay. He flips me a porno magazine. He says, maybe this will help. He smiles. I smile back. The mag is called Barely Legal. I flip through the pages. It doesn't help. At a strip bar in Kentucky, that guy across the room has three teeth. That's it. That's the whole poem.
I was waiting.
Kentucky has dental problems. Sunday afternoon drunk. The sign advertises truck parking, and the place smells like smoke. A woman in a black leather vest is arm wrestling a shirtless toothpick. The shirtless toothpick is complaining about foul play, but after a second defeat, he hands over $20. The bartender says, another, and everyone at the bar nods. Against Trucking, for Bob Pajic, who's an excellent Pittsburgh poet. Against Trucking. You've seen the commercials on late night TV. The one ads are filled with trucking jobs. Money is tight. It has been for years. You make a couple 1-800 phone calls. The other end of the line answers, a nice laugh, and says, it's an adventure. He quotes you some stuff about cents per mile and miles per paycheck. You get a calculator and do the math. It could be 50 grand a year. There's benefits and time off. You've always wanted to see the country and maybe write a Steinbeck traveling with his poodle type book. Don't do it. It's all a pretty oasis in the desert of unemployment, a bottle of good booze on the career shelf that someone drank and half filled with water. I've been sitting at a truck stop of I-83 exit 1 called Tom's Mobile, and it doesn't have a shower, a restaurant, or a TV lounge. I've been here for 3 days. I haven't showered. Breakfast was a bag of salt and vinegar chips. Dinner is going to be a microwave burrito again. I'm fat. My hair is a greasy, flaky mess. My beard needs trim, but I don't want the clippings all over the dashboard. I brush my teeth with bottled water and spit out the window so I won't have to use the restroom at the back of Tom's Mobile. I hate Tom's Mobile. It's not the beach, the mountains, or even the highway. The postcards at the counter are all lies. At the interview, a man in a red polo shirt said, see the country, you'll single, you'll love it, and handed me a contract. I signed the contract. I was single. I wanted to see the country. Maybe music down south, Beale Street, 12-bar blues until I couldn't hear straight. The ghost of Memphis Minnie leaning into my life. But no. It's truck stop after truck stop with a warehouse or paper factory in between. That 50 grand is more like 30, more like 28. Chicago looks just like Mississippi from a diner with a view of 15 diesel pumps and 100 trucks. Sleep is rarer than whiskey in church, except when sleep is all there is and freight is slower than Jesus buying drinks at the bar. Don't do it. check the newspapers again, try a headhunter, a job service, call up old debts, put friends on the spot. In the brochure I want to write, everything is smoke and pavement and the smell of diesel won't come off your hands. To make money, you have to work the hours. But to work the hours to make the money, you have to break the laws against working all the hours. A truck is not a house, but you live in your truck. Public restrooms are dangerous, and some pervert might pull a fastie and go for your groin. Watch out. The hookers are miserable from dealing with men who work too much to make too little. The waitresses know your kind. You become that kind. The gravy is loaded with fat and flecked with cigarette ash. There is a warehouse, and they can't unload you. You don't get paid for waiting around warehouses. Find a decent job at home and suck it up. Manage a McDonald's and skim the till. Deliver pizzas until you're middle-aged and creepy. If someone asks you to drive anything with more than four wheels, run. You keep thinking you're going to Mardi Gras, the wild bars of New Orleans, but your company doesn't haul jazz, and the closest you'll get to Bourbon Street and a piano player banging out the blues is a karaoke joint 300 miles away at a crappy mall in Shreveport, Louisiana.
That sort of covers it, doesn't it?
That's trucking industry in a nutshell.
Wow. Yeah. Do you have a chapbook of trucking poems?
I do.
That's great.
Yeah, it stinks, so it's bad. I don't talk about it. It really does. I mean, I wrote like all the poems on a I used to put my map across my steering wheel, uh-huh. And I'd get like bills of lading or whatever and write the poems on them. I'd take them home and type them up, and someone was stupid enough to publish a chapbook of them. And as soon as it came out, I called it Truck It, which is like the worst title in the world. And like, so I'm
well,
like,
you
mortified
have some
the
good
poems
here about, really? About it.
Thank you. The ones in the chapbook are not so good. They're not strong. So it's like, it's one you wipe off the resume.
Okay. We have time for one more poem, I think.
Okay. Short, long?
Short, I think.
It's called Don't Die, Jeffrey. Spit up the rest of the blood and quit. This close to middle age looks good. The cop says, look, don't kill anyone and let you go. Don't be the cop. When you call at dinner time, it's confusing. When you call at 3 a.m, you sound like you're swallowing the world. I don't tell you I love you enough because what I do best is fail. I wish I were a better rope. You can't start the night by throwing up, then finish the night by throwing up. Forget the doctor, your parents, everyone. Remember that every morning will always hold the possibility of despair, but better things too. Don't die, Jeffrey. I'm writing this from the bottom. The years have left you scrambled, and I don't believe in God.
The poetry of Dave Newman. Thanks so much.
Thanks. Awesome.
It was great. You've been listening to Prosody, WYAP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Alan Wadey. Sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in every Tuesday night at 7 for Prosody, 91.3 WYUP.